Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of The Tenets. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, as always, Stark Realm. How are you doing this week, Stark?
Pretty good.
Good to hear. Now, we would be joined by Zynode, but time zones be damned. It has set us apart. So, unfortunately, Zynode is on the road right now, as we are joined by amazing friend of the show, Mike Finnegan, lead dungeon designer.
Hello.
How you doing, man? Welcome back.
Thank you.
So this is our, third time together, I think, at this point? We've had you on quite a bit to discuss dungeons, talk about all kinds of new content coming out, and your team literally blew me out of the water with Herastorm. This is an incredible DLC that the folks at ESO get.
Yeah, we're pretty happy. I think the biggest part that we're happy about is just being able to kind of take a look at what we've done before, zero in on an area that we want to focus on for something, and like just kind of knock it out of the park when we do that. So it's been a lot of fun.
So this episode will air right as the DLC's coming out. So, you know, whatever sort of information you want to give away in that sense, Finn, feel free to talk. I just got to say, reminder to our people out there that this is going to come out, the actual Herastorm DLC, February 24th for PC players and March 10th for console players. So keep an eye out. This is part of ESO Plus. If you're already a subscriber, you'll get the DLC that way. But we're looking at two new dungeons in here, Ice Reach and Unhollow Grave. Whoa.
Yes.
You guys definitely want a spooky route this time, and it feels like that is palpable.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of part of this is dictated kind of like the whole year story. And I know that we've talked about it before, but we really wanted to with this year, last year, I'll rewind in a second. Last year with Wrathstone, they were great. You got to meet up with Thoraya again. You got to put two halves of the Wrathstone together. She hands it off to Abner Tharn, and then she's like, yeet, I'm out. So this year, when we did this, we were like, how can we get these characters and this stuff even more integrated? And that's exactly what we did. The characters that you're meeting in these two dungeons, they're going to progress through the whole chapter. Like, you're going to meet Fenorian again. You're going to see Lyris again. You're going to see these characters again, and that kind of carries that story forward. So it was a lot of fun.
I know you guys have been talking this a lot. It's massive. It was part of the cinematic trailer for the year, but it's the first time we get to encounter again in game Lyris in Ice Reach. You said it a second ago, and I can't ignore it because that is a pretty strong entrance she has on camera there.
Oh yes, she does. She is. So I loved it when we go and we approach these kind of things, we have characters that have a strong emotional bond for players and stuff. So coming through, but they also have strong personalities. So Lyris is not a damsel in distress. She's never oh, save me, here's my favor. And that's not her. So we have to do that justice. And it actually opens up avenues for us to say, hey, you know what? It's like the scene from Watchmen when, when Rorschach is I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me. That's exactly what Lyris is like. She's like wrecking face and Ice Reach. And it's like, no, you guys are trapped in here with me. So, it's good to do that justice.
You guys had it play really well, again, off of that trailer. So I wasn't the biggest Lyris fan back in the day. Not like some of our other friends, Ninja614 trying to ride Lyris her.
It's always disturbing a little bit.
Trying to mount Lyris, So she wasn't a big character to me before, but seeing...
big character.
Well, no, literally, that ties perfectly because until I saw the CGI trailer that really put her next to everybody in size, that was a big thing people were saying on the ground at Vegas. Wow, I didn't realize her stature compared to the rest.
She's a big girl.
And then you have her come in like a wrecking ball as we see her next in game. That flowed wonderfully. I just felt that power continue from the trailer right into game. And that's not something that people always easily translate. Sometimes trailers are misleading, but you guys seriously nailed it with that one. So great quest in Ice Reach.
yes, it's a lot of fun to do that. And we also, you touched on it earlier, that spooky element. That was kind of what we were going for. We touched on a little bit with, this is also another thing that we kind of like to, we play back, like, Droda of Ice Reach from Dire Frost is a completely made up character. We made her up when we did Dire Frost. And, you know, she was kind of this, you know, just this evil witch that kind of infiltrated this castle and took it over and whatnot. But when we were talking about what story we're going to tell, for this part of the Harrowstorm, for this, you know, this section of the Harrowstorm, what were we going to tell? And then we kind of like, we're like, well, what can we use? What can we use? And then we started brainstorming and thinking about stuff. And we brought up, you know, Droda of Ice Reach. We're like, Droda of Ice Reach, you know, that's a title, but where's Ice Reach? What is Ice Reach? And that kind of what gave birth to like, what is Ice Reach and what is it going to be? And what does it mean, that Droda was from there? And then that kind of, went from there. And that also, I will say, there's a bit of a spoiler. It's not just characters that you meet in these dungeons that progress through. You're going to see some, maybe some of the enemies that you've dealt with before in there too. So,
ooh, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Stark, I don't remember if we had talked. Did you actually get to play through these ones yet on the PTS?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so these are still kind of mysteries to you. I like it. Good. So we can kind of tease things. And as I mentioned, I've been through them once at this point, so I have a general overview, though I definitely feel like I'm missing story components that I need to go back and kind of relook at. So Ice Reach, we see a lot of different type of... what do I want to say? Are they elemental magics, kind of? We see all this confluence.
There's some necromancy in there, too, but for the most part, the witches focus on using elemental magic.
I definitely noticed the necromancer. How could I not, Finn? How could I not notice an entire part of a dungeon being all spooky like that?
Right. It's an entire boss, but, you know, whatever.
It's I love it. I love the art used in that dungeon too. It's a very cool thing, I think, for people that are looking to
cool, because it's ice.
You're so punny today. I love it. I need you to be in my life more often. So it's filled with all this kind of creepy stuff, and I it's kind of a spoiler, everyone, warning, but the Undaunted furnishings at the end, very cool too, very much play up. You got that nice totem we see that's going throughout the dungeon, and I was saying
that wickery kind of look. Yes. Also, the helms and the armor set that drops in there was like, that's really great, because we come through and we say, hey, we want like these frozen witches in the Sea of Ghosts in the north, you know, and then that's kind of the direction, or that's kind of like the idea, the synopsis that we give to art. And we say, can you run with it from there? And then they give us this just absolutely out of this world armor set and the helmets with all these wicker patterns. And I remember when, because usually we're all in these meetings and we sit down and we start reviewing the art, and I'm just like, this is badass. Like, what? Where'd this come from? This is so cool, and it's great from this little blurb of like, this is kind of what the dungeon is, and then they deliver this just awesomeness. So it was it's so good and so atmospheric going through Ice Reach.
The screen cap you guys used for the one of the articles here on the website just a couple days ago, where he's sitting in the throne.
Sorry about that.
Okay, we just had a little bit of audio issues. Stark's now stuck to his phone. His computer has betrayed him. My co-hosts are being taken out one at a time today.
I know, one at a time, slowly.
Oh,
slowly.
My gosh, it's methodical. Us. Yeah. So we were just...
We got Zynode with time. We changed the time zones on him and got Zynode, and now we blue screen Stark's computer.
Hey,
it's diabolical what we're doing.
I got one thing to say. I've got a couple backups running here at the very least. So good luck, everyone. We're still going strong. I was saying this art on the website. You were just talking to the team. You had them the small blurb, and they came out back with something amazing. I'm seeing the one of them sitting in a throne, flanked on both sides by people with all the different masks. And these are horribly creepy. They give me that film Strangers, the Strangers from a few years back. I get total vibes of that from especially some of these masks. Like, it is really good.
It's kind of Strangers, kind of Pet Cemetery, kind of, you know what I mean? It's got all those kind of like really creepy elements to it. A little bit of Blair Witch.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, so it was so awesome to see these kind of things, and it was great to see the kind of the reception after those came out on PTS and people started getting those and seeing them. They're like, oh my gosh, these things are so awesome. And I'm like, yeah, yep, they are. They look really, really good.
Super, super badass. So going through here, let's see. We mentioned the necromancy, of course. We mentioned the really cool wicker totem that comes with it. And then, Finn, what do people get as a reward by going through this dungeon? Do you want to talk a little bit about the general reward structure for this DLC cycle in terms of achievements and how they get little goodies?
Okay. So, yeah, if you go through and you complete the dungeon and you get the furnishings, so you had mentioned the furnishings, there's the standard three item sets. There's Undaunted Helm and Shoulders. The Undaunted Helm looks like the Mama C helmet, so it's got that really cool, side, like, wicker kind of thing. And then Ice Reach also, this is the first time we've given away a weapon style for cosmetic reward. So for if you complete it in veteran, you get Lyris's Ice Reach Battle Axe weapon style. Yeah. So you can apply that to all of your two-handed weapons and run around mimicking Lyris as best you can, although you're never that good. and then for just entering the dungeons, I don't know if it's the emote. I'm not sure if that's collector's edition or not, but the emote, the wicker mishap, the wicker man mishap emote, where you kind of light a.
I think you said on ESO Live that that was going to be the one for just walking.
Just entering. Yeah. The loyalty reward or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you just type wicker man and then it lights it on fire and it lights you on fire and you have to stomp it out and stuff. So that was pretty cool. There's a lot of good rewards in there for people that want to creepify their house.
Well,
run around like acting like Lyris.
Don't know anyone that wants to creepify their house or anything like that. not sure of any necromancers trying to bring that to life in game or anything like that. But I may have bought like a half a dozen of those totems while I was on the PTS there just to shove them in a house. Ultimately, like, that stuff's so great. I love that you mentioned the emote there. That is a very fun one. I like how
yes.
This is kind of also fitting with the Glenmorangie sort of motif that was released around Halloween. I feel a definite flow between these two there. There's a serious connection. If people were just getting the Witch's Cottage or anything like that, they really now have an excellent amount of content to add to it. So
absolutely.
Perfect. I love this place. So I like Ice Reach myself a bit more for the story.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the other one because there are two dungeons here.
Unhallowed Grave.
Unhallowed Grave. This one I freaking love because the boss fights and mechanics that are going on here.
Yes.
I felt like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, and that's actually, I mean, you touch on that. That's kind of like when we started Unhallowed Grave, we were like, well, before we started Harrowstorm, we were like, okay, we gotta take a look at incorporating, the grappling hook. It was so awesome from Dragonhold. It was such a iconic piece of kind of tech and stuff like that. So we were like, all right, well, how can we do this? This is kind of a mandate there. We got to use this in this dungeon. Now, what are we going to do? We came up with the story. We delved deep into the lore. I'm not going to give the spoilers for what the story is for Unhallowed Grave, but this is all straight from the lore. A lot of it. We embellished a bit, but for the most part, some of this stuff is from the lore. And then we said, okay, well, how can we incorporate this in there? And as typical in dungeons, we didn't do it half-assed. We were like, all right, if we're gonna put grappling hooks in here, then you're gonna use some damn grappling hooks. And it was great because the boss designers are like, all of them are like, oh, okay, how can I use this in my boss fight? What are we going to do for this boss fight? What are we going to do for this and stuff? And we got really creative uses out of that in the boss fights. So it was pretty awesome. It's pretty funny because some of this tech, we had to go to the engineers because how it was used in Dragonhold was great. It was fantastic. But it was more designed for kind of like solo leveling experience. Mm-hmm. So when you start throwing stuff in a dungeon, you necessarily complicate things. What does it look like? And you should have seen the first interactions we had where like one player would grappling hook and then nobody else could grappling hook because they were in the way. And like we had to go through and like resolve all of those issues because this has to work right in a four player environment. And that ended up translating back to the base game. So we actually ended up making the grappling hook kind of more solid and really solidified it for the entire game.
This dungeon really won me over on that. Go ahead, Stark. Continue.
I was going to say, this is the first time we've really had, you guys have added a sort of mobility system to the game and then kept using it outside of a single instance. So that's really cool.
Yeah, we developed the moving blocks from Moongrave. And then I think they used that in parts of Dragonhold.
I think that got moved forward. And there's a few times there's been some gimmicks like that. I think this is the first time it's been something that's attached to character, though. Like this
yes,
is part
you're
of
right.
you.
You're right. This is very much a thing that you get to do as a character and kind of move around and stuff. And yeah, we haven't really done too much of that.
It's really cool.
I do love what you said that it translated to the base game, the improvements you guys all created with the grappling hook. I feel like as a guy that really only experienced the grappling hook through Unhallowed Grave. I didn't do it before. It's won me over. It seems like a great component to keep with the game in many ways.
It's pretty awesome to fly around like Batman. And that was part of like, it's pretty great when people go in there and they say, you know, our players are willing to take some of these chances and stuff. And I see players and they walk up and they see a pole and they grappling hook across. And then they go, wait a minute. Will this work? And then they jump off and then they grappling hook in the air and they're like, oh crap, that worked. And then they start to do all kinds of crazy things and stuff. And so it's actually really great to see, you know, players kind of discover these things that we thought about too, you know, to come up with and say, okay, well, you have to be able to use it this way. And yeah, you have to be able to use it this way. And then when they discover that, they're like, this is just so cool. So it's really great to see that payoff at the end of everybody just being so ecstatic to just grappling hook around these spaces.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's such a hit, and it did add that extra layer of, hey, this is a dungeon. I think you said it best there a second ago. This is a dungeon. It's about me. And I'm exploring by doing this action. Like just the simple fact that you're having to traverse things, you're going up and exploring, that makes it so much more important. It makes it a lot more impactful. Exploring, though, is a key word because this dungeon, Rich has made a point of telling me I have found exactly zero of the, is it six? Is it six, Finn? Six, like, what six, would you call though? Is it, what are they? Hidden?
There are secrets. There's secrets. It behooves people to explore. So this is a lot of times in dungeons, you know, it's a fairly linear experience where you kind of go through and you know where you're going. The map reveals everything. You know exactly the path. We've explored it a little bit. Like if you looked in Ruins of Mazatun, there was this whole maze section in the middle. And then in March of Sacrifices, it had these other little Indric hunts and stuff like that. But this is the first time that we've actually like, no, exploration is a component of this that we want to really bring home. And we don't reveal the things. We don't give you the secrets until you discover them. And it's one of those things that like, and then we tease you at the end, right? You get to kind of like Voria Sanctum and there's this big door that's got an effect on it. And you're like, what the heck is this? And that's kind of the beauty of how this all works where you're like, I don't know, you know, what the heck this thing is and stuff. So, just to get the juices flowing and to get people like enticed by like, well, how do I get in here? And it's great because there's an achievement to get in there, but the achievement literally just says, enter Voria Sanctum. And you're like, but how? And that's a great thing because they don't know. We don't tell you.
Oh,
well, you're really enjoying this, aren't you?
I am loving this.
So that I have to ask. I have to ask a question here so now you've gone from just taking player tiers from, you know, beating them up in fights. Are you now growing a morbid fascination for maybe hiding things in dungeons going forward if you have the time? Like, this seems like a fun concept when it's appropriate to carry forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, as typical in dungeons, we don't try to just do the exact same thing twice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But spicing things up and stuff, you could always take a look at what we're trying to, you know, you'll see that some of that stuff in Dungeons in the future, just spicing it up and creating little things for people to do that's maybe not necessarily part of the initial story or anything. So, but I can't say that we're going to do this level of side content every time. And that's just because, I mean, I can't guarantee that.
Well, it would get boring too, right? If every dungeon,
yeah, there's such a thing as skill knowledge or intrinsic knowledge that people generally get. So the more they play through our game, this actually goes to balance as well, as you know, as players get, basically players are getting good. Is what it boils down to, is, and it's not just knowing how to do rotations and mechanics and stuff like that. It's also knowing what the world can give you and knowing what to expect from the world, and then you start looking for those things. So the first time you put in secrets or anything like that, people are like, maybe not expect it. And then when they find them, like, oh, these are secrets, I'm going to now look for these secrets everywhere. So it causes us to up our game a little bit and to change things up from what players can expect.
Ooh, that's a really good point that will kind of segue into other things. Go ahead, Sark.
Mm-hmm. I remember when we talked about you to the last time, we were talking about the transition from the billboard rewards from being trifecta, so you do no death, speed run, and hard mode, to being just for completing on vet because of accessibility. But is this another way to encourage replayability when you're looking at dungeons where that's not the case, where it's just completed on vet to get the billboard reward, but then there's more stuff buried in there to encourage people to go back?
Yeah, I mean, part of this is, I mean, there is an actual cosmetic reward for doing the secrets in this as well. So that was part of the reward process that we wanted to do too. And much like in March of Sacrifices, there's other benefits to doing the side content. So it's all part of billboarding, but it's also part of, like, if you're willing to explore and willing to go off the beaten path and stuff like that, maybe you'll get more loot, maybe you'll get a buff that'll make the dungeon easier, maybe you'll do, you know, all these other kind of side reward type things, so that it can even make the dungeon even a little bit easier. Now, the people that are going for a no death hard mode speed run, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do the side content on that because it just takes too much time. So they're just going to burn through it and get what they want to done. But it does benefit those players that want to branch off and do this, and they get tangible benefits. So even if the last boss or the fourth boss or the third boss is too hard, perhaps if you do some of the secrets, you'll have advantages when you go into those fights.
Oh, ooh. That sounds really cool. Crap. Now I gotta get back into these and start digging around. So, Stark, you brought up billboarding a second ago, and that is something that we've talked with you about before, Finn. I think it's something we talked about even kind of on stage in Vegas for a half a second. I'm a player who likes to go and chase a shiny. You put it there, and as long as it looks pretty, I'll go get it. So what kind of billboarding have you found effective? Because you guys have done quite a few at this point.
I think that we in that process, we've learned a lot. It's not just a new skin or, you know, something like that. Because we've taken a look at what are the billboards that we want to put out there also have to be really, really cool. Depths of Malatar is a good example of that. Skin is everywhere. People show the hell off that skin because it is so cool looking. Maul of Lorkaj back in the day, when you got that skin and you put that on, everybody knew and everybody was like, yeah, that guy did this kind of thing. So that's kind of like going forward is like these are kind of like the bars that we want. We want people to show these things off. So part of the component is putting it behind this content that they're able to do. And part of it is it's got to be really, really cool. And it's not just always skins. We have to take a look at mounts are a good example of with the mount we gave away in Sunspire. Those people will run around on that mount. And you could tell, oh man, that's a God Slayer. That's somebody who's done some of the hardest stuff in the game. Yeah. We have ideas for how to encourage this billboarding even more so in the future. So I can't really go into that, but ooh. Yeah, it's been really effective, and I think that you can see just I mentioned the purified Meridia skin. That's a huge one, like out there. Like tons of people are wearing that skin, and that's like, okay, you know, that's the kind of high bar mark that we want to hit with these things, to say people are super excited. They will run these dungeons specifically just to get these skins so that they can wear them and they can play on their character.
I think that's a very good point. I think for people out there that may have missed one of our last interviews with Finn, for the idea of billboarding, it is you know, showing off something that you've achieved within a dungeon or trial there. Usually in this case, like you just mentioned, Finn, a Meridia skin done by completing mm-hmm. Depths of Malatar on veteran difficulty. A lot of that is it, right? I think so.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. It's VDOM.
When we say billboarding, we also mean like. It's not just that you got the achievement. It's something that is visual mm-hmm. and cool looking that you can wear in town when you're doing Ritz, when you're doing shout out to Inklings there, when you're doing you know, when you're doing whatever it is you're doing in town or something, and people will walk by and they'll notice you and they'll be like, hey, either I know where that skin came from, or where did you get that? And then they can ask those questions, and then they say, oh, I didn't know that came from there. That's cool. And then also not locking it behind super tough. It's like, because it's a bit deflating if the billboard is like, oh, that's a really cool skin. How did you get that? The second hardest piece of content in the game. Oh, well, all right.
Yeah, crap.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If it's accessible, at least you have a shot at it. So,
well, that was kind of, I suppose, kind of an issue with stuff like the Vet Scale Collar Peak skin or the Ruins of Mazatoon skin, where it's like you had to do mm-hmm. some fairly challenging achievements to get those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some of the harder end trials skins, mm-hmm. you know, the fabrication.
Oh, yeah, plus two, and, plus three.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. So like you had, there's some really tough stuff in there that we were like, you know, that's the delicate balance we have of rewarding the players that are able to complete that kind of stuff versus getting the desired effect of being having a lot of people show these off and getting people interested in this content.
I think that's a great.
Neat that you're actually.
Go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, it's neat that you're experimenting with new varieties of billboarding too. Because I mean, yeah. You're obviously not going to say where you're going from here, but you know, you've got a new weapon now. Mm-hmm. We've had, I don't think pets were in originally. Those started coming in more recently. There's been some variety. Like the skins are really great.
The Wicker Man emote. The Wicker Man mm-hmm. mishap emote is another good one. You could be in the middle of the town and do that, and people will stop and be like, what the hell is that? How'd you get that? You know what I mean? And it's like, well, this is how you get it. So yeah, all those things are lending to the ability to do that. The body markings from Unhallowed Grave, which is what you get in Unhallowed Grave.
Oh, right, yeah.
Are so cool looking. They're like, it was awesome to go to it's awesome to go to the art team and say, okay, we want, you know, this is kind of what we want. This is the idea for what we're doing. And they came back to us and they were like, well, can we do body markings instead of a skin? And I was like, yeah, let's take a look and see what we could do here. And then they showed me and I was like, are those tattoos like textured? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's really cool. Let's do that.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to see. And it can play, because they're body markings, they can play with some skins that you can use too. So
nice.
Yeah, that's something that's actually, and I realize this isn't really your field, that's something that's really interesting with some skins, because some body markings will actually blow through even skins you wouldn't expect them to. Mm-hmm. Especially stuff like the Sigic tattoos are actually visible on some of the full body skin sets. Yep. Where it won't color the skin, but you can see it glow through.
Yeah. We mentioned the purified Meridia skin that actually shows quite a bit of the tattoos mm-hmm. that you would put on, like the Sigic skins that you just talked, or the Sigic body markings you just talked about, as well as the necromancer tattoos that you can get and stuff. So yeah, there's quite a few body markings that'll play nice with those.
Oh, that's great. People are going to absolutely love that. And I love what mm-hmm. you said a second ago. It kind of encourages this in-town community in a way, you know, encourages mm-hmm. players to talk to one another once they see this billboarding style stuff. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because it really is the core, I think, of an MMO. I mean, it's people going out and doing things and bringing back their achievements to show it off to other players, and then they go out and find out.
It is the essence of the Undaunted Guild, right?
Right.
Like, the Undaunted Guild is a bunch of frat sororities, you know, boys like, let's just go out and kill some shit, get drunk and kill some shit. And then they're all just hanging out like, dude, did you see when I killed that thing the other day? And that's what the Undaunted Guild is everybody hanging out in this little enclave and like, check out this tattoo. And they're like, oh, where'd you get that? Oh, I got that, you know, I got drunk one night and then I wound up with this tattoo. Must have killed it in bed.
Oh, some memer out there needs to make the Undaunted frat recruitment video. Like, I just need to see, like, falling over, like, a beer pong table in the front lawn.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Hey. I mean, if we could have got that as, like, furniture, that's what every Undaunted enclave would look like. Just Greek letters and beer pong tables, and that's what it would have been.
A lot of old couches here. What's going on? Why?
Yeah, exactly. They're on fire. It's just a bunch of couches on fire.
Yeah, gotta recycle them somehow in the ESO universe. Guess it's just burning them. But you guys brought up to some degree an idea of difficulty here. This is something we always talk about when it comes to dungeons. So what do you see, Finn, as the difficulty of these two compared maybe to other DLC dungeons? Where would you maybe rank these in difficulty if you could?
So I think Scalebreaker came in a little bit more difficult than like Wrathstone. Mm-hmm. Some of those dungeons in we have a pretty good handle, so it's not like way out of whack. It's not like Wolf Hunter, which was those dungeons, or Moon Hunter and Keep in particular. It's a really difficult dungeon. So I would put them about on par with Depths of Malatar. I think that's probably, and it's actually a good, I think, target to shoot for. Enough people can do the veteran of that. It's a fun and enjoyable experience as you go through it and stuff. Once you kind of figure out some of the nuances of these dungeons, you can kind of power through some of these, and they're not as soul crushing as, you know, like Scale Crawler hard mode or,
Fang Lair hard mode.
The Fang Lair hard mode.
Let's not talk about the owls in there.
Yeah, so that's why I would probably put him about like Depths of Malatar, not quite as hard as Frostvault or either of the Scalebreakers, but about on par with Depths of Malatar.
Very interesting. And I'm glad to hear it sounds like you found a happy mark there with Malatar and everything. I think that's very good. We know that a lot of players out there can be scared about getting into dungeons, but mm-hmm. on normal difficulty, it's a very enjoyable experience, especially...
Yes.
I mean, for those, there's a lot of the community that likes to do quests in dungeons, you know, and they don't get the proper time to do it a lot because they'll run dungeon finder things. But we've really been trying to encourage kind of groups in the community stepping up, bringing a friend along. I've been trying to do that with some people, too, just to get them in there because on normal, they're very approachable dungeons. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you crank it up to vet and you start whipping tears out of us.
Yeah, and then hard mode is... Hard mode's even, you know, the next level up. But yes, on normal, funny enough, like Ice Reach is really accessible on normal. Unhallowed Grave is probably a little bit more difficult, and that's just because the traversal mechanics. So if you're not used to kind of, you know, moving around the space with the grappling hook, then it's a bit of a learning curve with that. Once you get it though, it's fine. But yeah, that's actually kind of where that learning curve comes in. But yeah, absolutely, the dungeons, the idea for the normal mode is players that maybe don't, I get it, some people just don't want to min-max their character and mm-hmm. try and we get it, we absolutely don't want to exclude those people, but doing dungeons and grouping with other players, it's fun. It's a core part of our game. It's a core part of any MMO. And I can't tell you how many times we've heard the, oh man, I was really intimidated by dungeons. And then I went in with a friend and we had these two other, and we had a blast. And then we ended up doing dungeons all night. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what the kind of experience we want. And that's what we want to target normal mode for, is those people that, hey man, I just want to go in here and have a good time, and we can smash face, get some good rewards, and go through it.
I love it. I love it. You're right. It's so much that if you can get someone into a dungeon with friends, with a good group, with something like that, it really changes the game. I've had so many people in Twitch chat say, I've been playing since beta and I still haven't run a dungeon yet in ESO. And I'm like, I will gladly go with you. These are an addiction. Right. Once you open the gate... You'll be every day doing, you know, your pledges or something of that nature. So it's getting people over the hurdle.
I mean, I went in, I think, because I went in with friends way back at launch, back before Champion Points even, in vet rank. But then a couple of them quit the game, and I just didn't touch Dungeons again until like 2016, I think. There was like 2 year gap. And
wow. I believe it, though. It's a thing, you know, they can be scary. And if you don't want to pug a group, you know, you never know what sort of trouble you might run into there if you do. Or, you know, you might have a great time and make some friends, but you never know. And that uncertainty is enough to scare a lot of people off, I think.
Also, way back in the day, there was no group finder.
Oh, was it that far back? I'm sorry.
It was that far back.
Yikes.
No, I know.
Yeah, the good old days. So, Ben, as we kind of run out of time here with you today, we have a couple more questions just to toss in your direction. And these are a little bit more about your design approach to dungeons here, you personally. So one of them the guys threw in here was, what games have influenced you as a developer?
Oh, my gosh. A lot. I mean, every game I play, pretty much. Kind of reward structures in even stuff like Madden or racing games or something like that. But like, some of my favorite games are like Darksiders 2, which actually is more of a direct analogy, because that game is all about boss fights and stuff like that. But they also add some traversal elements, so seeing that kind of stuff is really fun in our game. But I love single player third person action games are my jam for the most part. Mm-hmm. But then I also love my shooters too. So you know what I mean? Like, and it's really great to see interesting and fun mechanics even in shooters where I'm like, ooh, because every time I play anything, whenever we get to a moment or a boss fight or whatever it is, I instantly am thinking, okay, how can we do that in our game? You know, I mean, that's my instantly where my mind goes is like, okay, how can we do that in our game? Or break it down into the core elements of what are they doing? What made this so much fun? And how can we do something like that? How would that be fun in our game? How would that work in our game? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And even in that kind of design exercise, or even that kind of just analyzing, it opens up avenues of like, maybe we could do, you know, what would this look like here and stuff like that. So
I absolutely love that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of playing games kind of a different way. I mean, I have fun playing games, but then I instantly go to analysis of like, okay, why was this fun, and how can we steal that?
I think we all do that. I mean, I definitely do that in content creation. I'm like, damn, that's a good idea. How do I work with something similar? So that's a very honest approach to it too. I mean, that's how you learn and get some unique ideas. I mean, pulling from a shooter might not seem obvious, but to some people, but at the same time, it's an experience, like you said, and you're figuring out ways to replicate and diversify the ones you're providing. So,
yeah, I mean, when you're talking about shooters, like Half-Life 2 did a lot of work on trying to really build the idea of a combat arena.
Yep.
From where the shooter was before. And actually games in general were before that, to be able to familiarize yourself with the environment and run with it. So yeah, no, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have another one. You talked about this a little bit throughout the episode, but now this question I have here specifies public dungeons. Stark, did you do this one, or was this a Zynode question?
Yeah, I did this one. I was wondering, because it was sort of independent. I was wondering which team was working on the public dungeon and if that factors into like difficulty gradation, getting people from when they're doing overland content and story content to starting out into dungeons, or if that's actually part of the overland team.
So public dungeons are done by the overland team. So that's pretty much, yeah. I mean, that's pretty much who does that. Initially, I think when the game launched, we had it was all part of the dungeon team, so a lot of that early work would have been done by the dungeon team for some of the first public dungeons. But then we gradually shifted that, because of the experience that we wanted in public dungeons, we gradually shifted that back over to the overland teams, because it just made more sense for that team to be able to do that.
Pardon me, I'm losing my voice apparently. Yeah, that makes sense. Go ahead, Sark, you continue. I gave my voice back. Water.
No, I'm just sitting here thinking, because it does create a kind of, there is a gradation, at least from player experience, when you're transitioning from you're doing content with other people around, or you're just doing basic story content, to you're getting yourself into a dungeon, but you're doing it with the possibility of other people coming through. to then actually getting into your territory. So I was kind of wondering, like, where did that fit in between these two? But I think you covered that.
Well, I have a question I'll tack on to it and say, from an outsider's perspective, how do you, as the Dungeons team, Finn, working with specific monsters and mobs like that in Dungeons, how do you work with sharing some of those assets with other teams? Like, so we've seen some mobs in public dungeons, to Stark's point, you know, use similar attacks, and it almost feels like it's training you in a way. So I was kind of wondering maybe if you could explain, just even vaguely, how that trails between the two. How do you kind of make that tie?
Yeah, so every team here that's building monsters or encounters or something, we all have budgets for doing different things. Mm-hmm. So generally, the monster team is falls under the Overland team, and they really work closely with the story teams to develop new monsters and new combat packages for existing monsters or something along those lines. So those are usually developed so that they have a basic amount of not just a basic amount, a good amount of attacks that will challenge players in Overland content. And then sometimes those monsters are earmarked for stuff like world bosses or public dungeon bosses or something like that, in which case they're going to be given a suite of abilities that would specifically relate to that and challenge more like group content. From that point on, though, we usually on the dungeon team, we go through and it's part of our story process and take a look at what monsters are out there and what monsters would work and make sense in the dungeon space we're going to. And I have a dedicated animator, a dedicated effects artist. We have dedicated assets so that we take whatever base stuff that they've done. You know, if this monster has, you know, four or five attacks in the Overland, and then we'll take that and we'll take a look at the animations that they already have and the effects they already have and then decide, oh, we are going to use that or we're not going to use that. And then we budget in all new abilities and stuff. And then our animators will go through and animate, our effects artists will put new effects on it. And then it's out in the wild. So at that point in the future, they could take a look and they say, oh, you know what? That was a really cool use of this monster. You know, and that usually we work with them and they'll say, hey, we were thinking about using this in here. And we'll be like, okay, well, this was a super iconic ability for the dungeon. So it would probably be better if you didn't use that in the Overland as well. But all these other things are fair game or something like that. So we just kind of work with them to make sure that we're all on the same page and we don't want to step on anybody's toes.
I love that. And I appreciate you sharing that because that's the kind of intertwining of different areas as we see them again as outsiders in ZeniMax. Not sure how people work together as teams in that way. So that's really interesting to hear. I like that. So you get a model of one that has abilities and then your team adds on top of that to make them more unique. That's really cool.
And sometimes, so it's funny because there's a lot of stuff that makes up a monster. You know what I mean? It's not just the model that it looks like. It's the rig that it's using. It's all this other stuff. And a lot of times, some of that will be transposed. A good example of this is the Argonian behemoth and the werewolf behemoth. Those started as the same essential rig. So when we started to develop the werewolf behemoth for Moonhunter Keep and March of Sacrifices, we used just in early production, it was an Argonian behemoth. Because that was kind of the anim set that it was going to use. It's the rig it was using. So it was going to have a lot of those base attacks. And then we layered those attacks or we changed it based on, okay, well, this doesn't make sense when the Argonian behemoth would do this because this isn't a lizard. This is a giant wolf. So we need to change or add a new anim here or something like that. So the rig that the monster is using is also really, really determinant for the animations and stuff we're going to use too.
Very cool. I like that. That's
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good look behind the curtain. So I got one more question here. Stark, do you want to take this one away? It plays off of this perfectly here, talking with some sharing of assets and Overland. I think this might have been yours or Zine notes.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to? Yeah. I think we actually kind of covered this when we were talking about the public dungeons. But yeah, how do you want to ease players into more difficult content?
Yeah. It's that. But I also have a little bit to add on to this here, which is. Sorry, my document's a little out of order, but also asking about tuning for endgame content. What are your thoughts on veteran difficulty overland content? So that can be as vague or specific as you would like, but the idea of more challenging content based on where players stand. Like you said, people have learned a lot and the game's changed a lot in its time.
So that's going to play somewhat into what it is. So, you know, you remember back in the day when we had Cadwell Gold and Silver. So that was essentially...
Oh, man. You'd go into Cad Silver and you would get wrecked by those veteran mud crabs.
Yeah, so that was
Some serious stuff.
And that was part of the whole veteran content and Overland and stuff. And it just wasn't that well received. So that was kind of why we spent this whole time in One Tamriel kind of pulling that stuff out and making it more accessible. Now, over the years, there is, I talked about this intrinsic knowledge that the player base gathers. So that lends to how we develop content in even in the future and now. So if you look at the difference between Auradon and Elsewhere, as an example, those are really different starter experiences. Whereas if you're going through Auradon and you're used to the game, like if you started in Elsewhere and you've got used to playing in Elsewhere and you go back to Auradon, Auradon's going to seem really, really easy. So over the years, we've kind of adapted to this shared learning that the player base has and have adjusted kind of like new experiences, new chapters and stuff like that to account for that. It hasn't been quite to the level that some people have learned. But where you would get that is you would see it in like dungeons. So the difference between obviously DLC veteran dungeons and veteran Fungo Grotto is a good example. Again, veteran Fungo Grotto, I mean, that used to be somewhat difficult content. And then, you know, as players have learned and got better at it, we adjusted our mark for veteran content or for in the DLC dungeon. So yeah, that's kind of like how we try to do it is it even in trials is the same way. When you talk about, you know, veteran Aetherian Archive is way different than veteran Sunspire. And the hope is that as you start to do these, and we tried to do this based part of the way through LFG so that when you are a fresh champion rank character, you can LFG into a certain amount of veteran dungeon, but you can't do any of the DLC because those are locked behind veteran or champion rank 300. So that's kind of like where we're easing people in. Right when you get to champion ranks, you start to learn how to do some of these veteran dungeons, and then once you get to champion rank 300, we think that you've kind of gotten some of that knowledge, so now you can dip your toes into some of these other veteran dungeons.
And also the scaling is the dungeons unlock on normal. That didn't when One Tamriel first hit, I don't think that was a thing yet.
No,
like it would just turn you loose on everything.
Well, we had it locked by tier. So because what it was originally when the game launched and we actually segregated players based on level, the dungeons would unlock, but it was unlocked by tier. So tier one unlocked at like level 12 or 10.
12, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so that was Banished Cells, Fungal Grotto, and Spindle Clutch. And they all unlocked at the same time. So when Tamriel came out, that was kind of how we LFG'd it. But then we added the part twos for those into the same bracket. So Fungal Grotto 1 and Fungal Grotto 2 would both unlock at level 12. Then when we went through and we did level up rewards, we took a harder look at that and said, okay, as part of the level up rewards, let's gradate. You know, let's make a gradient on what unlocks at one time. So now instead of just getting a bracket of here's 10 dungeons you can do, it allowed it to be like, okay, at level 10, you get Fungal. At level 11, you get Spindle. At level 12, you get Banished Cell. You know what I mean? So we had a gradient of unlocking that stuff.
No, it was a little bit odd originally because I think Banished Cells was pretty easily the hardest first tier unlock.
Yes, it was. You can tell which one we did last.
Also the prettiest of the initial three.
It was a very pretty dungeon. That was very much our psychedelic you remember the game? You remember the movie The Game?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, so this was a movie where Kirk no, not Kirk. Michael Douglas.
No, Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas gets pulled into some crazy real world game where they start screwing with his life. Well, at one point he walks into his house and they're playing music and there's fluorescent spray paint all over the place. And that's kind of like where we were going. We were just like, we want this to look creepy and fluorescent sigils all over the place and like just madness. Goal for that. So
mission accomplished.
Insane asylum where people get to paint on the walls kind of thing.
Yeah, mission accomplished for sure. Well, Finn, thank you so much for joining us on this episode here, because this you gave us a lot of fantastic information. Like I said, especially love pulling back the curtain, talking about how some of the monsters get created. I feel like we learn a whole new concept or get a whole new understanding of the game whenever you come on the podcast here.
That's like, awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you just keep peeling back the layers there. So, hey, keep everyone in the loop. As a reminder for our audience out there, we're looking for Hairstorm to come out on February 24th. That's very exciting. Yep. That should be the day this episode hits. So,
awesome.
So Finn, I assume you're going to be watching Twitch and stuff for tears that evening.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You guys get out there. Get into
I don't know for tears.
Oh,
it's for the joy that players have after a hard fought victory.
Are you really? You're going to sugarcoat it at the end of the episode. I see. I like it. Hey, on the way out the door, remember Finn's a really good guy. He's not looking to die. Forget everything he said before.
The hashtag is a lie, is all I'm saying.
And our console friends out there, you guys will get a copy of this on March 10th. If you're already an ESO Plus subscriber, as I mentioned earlier, you will get Harrowstorm in this. They're in your ESO Plus subscription. Now, one thing we should also remind people, this is going to require a reinstall of the game that the launcher will take care of completely on its own, so I'm told. Is that still... Just set it and forget
that
it.
That is still accurate. It is, I think it's about 16 gigabytes smaller on PC and like 30 gigabytes smaller on console.
I can confirm.
That's what we've seen on the PTS.
Yeah, PTS 16. So, you know, it's
the
really...
The PC changed. Like, obviously, we haven't seen the console change on PCS.
What's funny, because...
Yeah, right, they're... right. Yeah, but the console change is even smaller. Mm-hmm. I think it's 30 gigabyte less.
And they just got
console, so
they got
huge.
Slammed by some big updates the other day, right? Like console was getting hit with like big COD updates of 64 gigs, and I'm like, well, at least ESO is going to be saving you half of that space. Look at that! Get your ESO on, everybody. So Finn, thank you again. I appreciate you taking the time for this. We would love to have you back on later in the year, as always, as is our new tradition around these parts. Talk more dungeons, and maybe even get you in to talk. We've never had an episode about trials before. You know, we get you in here for the Q1 and 3 stuff, but maybe we should do a trials episode at some point.
Yeah, just... might be worth it.
Hey, I think that could
be...
You'll
have to see what's coming with within Greymoor with that.
So soon, yet so far. Well, okay, we will let you go, Finn, because I'm sure you got a busy day lined up here. Thank you again, Finn, and we will talk with you soon.
Thanks.
Hey, everybody listening, thank you so much for tuning in. So this is a wrap on today's episode. Very huge thank you to Mike Finnegan for coming on the show. As you just heard, he's fantastic. He just nails it every time. So huge thank you to ZeniMax for letting us borrow him on occasion, letting him out of the cage to come on the show here with us and just chit-chat. Hope everyone out there learned something from it. I really like when Finn shares that sort of information. I think next up on the show, we're probably going to have Rich on here coming up soon to talk about Greymoor stuff just around the corner. But in the meantime, I mean, we're going to keep pumping out good content for you guys. Zynode's going to be back next week. Stark's going to be back. If you have thoughts or ideas for us, please let us know. If you're struggling on something in ESO, let us know. That way we can talk about it. I personally feel like I hit that level of ESO development where I've crossed the threshold. I feel like I understand almost everything that there is to be understood to some degree. Now, that's an awesome feeling, but at the same time, it also gives me a little bit of blinders as to what people out there are trying to overcome, trying to understand. So if you have one of those things, let us know. You know, you can email us. It is thetenantspodcast@gmail.com. You can find me over on twitch.tv/Kyle Dempster Studios. many nights of the week. I think we're doing 5 nights a week there now. You can also join the Discord, discord.gg/KDS. Submit some ideas from the show for any or through any of those routes, and we will be happy to listen to it, read it over, probably get a spot in the show. I also, we might do something where we start calling out some reviews. So if you want to leave a review in iTunes or any other platform like that, that'd be amazing. We might start going in there and checking those, reading them off. Love to hear your thoughts on everything. And until next week, everybody, enjoy your journeys across Tamriel. Bye-bye.